Rabbi Yehuda Halevi was born in 1075. He died in 1141. He was born in Spain. I think when he was born it was Christian Spain, but throughout his life he was basically living in Muslim Spain, which the differences between Christian Spain and Muslim Spain are quite extreme in terms of their attitude towards secular knowledge and their involvement in secular knowledge. In the Christian world, we're really deep in the medieval ages, in all aspects of the world, of the word, and archaic and not so enlightened. And in the Muslim world, there was much more enlightenment, and there was, I don't mean that in the like the 18th century term or 17th century term enlightenment, but in terms of being enlightened and being educated and being interested in poetry and art. And we know that all of the Jews who lived in Spain at that time, so they also, many of their own interests paralleled the interests of the world around them. And Rabbi Yehuda Halevi wrote poetry, he wrote philos. He learned with Moshe Ibn Ezra. And there's a tradition that his son-in-law, that his daughter married of Avraham Ibn Ezra. That's the Ibn Ezra that you're probably more familiar with, the Parshan on Chumash. In fact, we even have a couple of locations in his parish where he says the famous one is by the Aseres HaDibros, where in the Ibn Ezra he says, Rabbi Yehuda Halevi asked me, why do we say Anochi Hashem Elokecha Asher Hotzeisicha Me'aretz Mitzrayim, and we don't say Anochi Hashem Elokecha Asher Boras Olam? How can we connect our Anochi Hashem Elokecha, our statement of faith, or our identification with faith, why do we connect that with the Exodus and we don't connect that with Bria Sa'olam? Ibn Ezra says that was what Yehuda Halevi asked me, that question. So we know that there was certainly a relationship there between Rav Avraham Ibn Ezra and Yehuda Halevi. There's also a legend that says that he died we do know he did die in Eretz Yisrael in 1141, that he was always yearning for Eretz Yisrael. We know this from many of his piyutim, of his tremendous love for Eretz Yisrael, and some of the slichos that the kinos that he wrote, his tremendous love for Eretz Yisrael. And the legend has it that he arrived at Eretz Yisrael at the very end of his life, and he bent down to kiss the ground, and a Turkish or Muslim probably at that time horseman rode by and killed him right at that spot. That he made it to Eretz Yisrael and then he died right there in Eretz Yisrael. We don't obviously have any way to verify that story, but that's the legend that they say about Rabbi Yehuda Halevi. And his major work was a sefer called Kuzari. Now, Kuzari, the sefer Kuzari, is a historical fiction. Philosophic historical fiction? Well, not really historical fiction. It's what I mean by that is that he's writing, again, you have to remember, he's living in the 12th century, in the 1100s. He's writing a story about the Khuzars, which I think were 7th century. They were a tribe of sorts living in, Eastern land that were interested in Judaism. The king had an interest in Judaism. The king of the Khazars found out, he sought out some Jewish scholars. He pursued his interest in Judaism. And he, and then, you know, I guess a little bit like our Parsha, he then convinced his entire people, not for Bris Milah, but he convinced all of them to convert to, well, I guess Bris Milah would be part of that, to convert to Judaism. And this is a true story, in the historical story, that the Khuzar kingdom back in the 7th century, they converted to Judaism. So what Rabbi Yehuda Halevi does in the Kuzari is he basically creates, that's why I said historical fiction, it's obviously not fiction, but it's historical nonfiction. He constructs a conversation that may have taken place, obviously that didn't really happen, this specific discussion, but he basically constructs what perhaps might have been that conversation that led the Khuzar king to become Jewish. So the basic structure of the Sefer Kuzari, which, like many of the works we've been studying, was written in Arabic and was then translated into Hebrew, it begins with the king of the Khuzars seeking out many different religious people, thinkers. He starts with a philosopher and then with a Christian, and he's questioning them, and when he doesn't get a satisfactory answer, he moves on to a different person. And then eventually he speaks with a chacham, with a Jew, and he's very impressed with the Jew's answer. So he forgets about the philosopher and about the Christian, and he focuses his time on the Jew, and the rest of the book then is basically questions that the Khuzar king asks about basics of Judaism and the Chacham's response. And this obviously is a literary device that Rav Yehuda Halevi uses in order to present a lot of the basic tenets of Judaism. So one of the major themes in the Sefer Khuzar, and one of the major themes obviously is Eretz Yisrael, and that's why it's very popular in yeshivas such as ours, the Sefer Khuzari. But that's one of the major themes is Eretz Yisrael, and this is, speaks of Rav Yehuda Halevi's own person, that he had a tremendous love for Eretz Yisrael. What was the famous poem / piyut that he wrote? Libi b'Mizrach v'ani b'sof ha-ma'arav. That even though I'm stuck in the West and Europe, my heart is really in the East, is really in Eretz Yisrael. So, besides that major theme of Eretz Yisrael, there's another major concept that emerges from the Sefer Khuzari, and that's what I want to speak about today, because whenever you speak about Jewish chosenness, Bechiras Yisrael, the idea that we're a chosen nation, so the discussion often begins with the Sefer Khuzari. So, the big question in the Sugya, the Chakira, the big question in the sugya is, why is it that Jews are chosen? Is it because of some inherent quality to a Jew? That on some biological level, a Jew is a unique person, different than other animals or different than other people? Or is it more of a mission-based chosenness? Is it because we were given a divine mission? We're really no different than the Gentiles on a biological, inherent level. But we were given a special mission from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So, I want to discuss the Shitas HaKuzari. I want to make it clear that the Khuzari is not necessarily the only voice in this discussion, and this is not a shiur on Jewish chosenness. This is a shiur on the Khuzari. So we're going to be investigating his specific perspective, and the reason he's quoted so much is because of the way that he articulates it extremely clearly. So let's begin. We're going to do a bunch of reading in the Khuzari. It's hard Hebrew, but we're going to try to read quickly to understand a little bit so we can get a little bit of a taste for the Sefer. So we're in Ma'amar Aleph, and you'll see that each line or each paragraph is subdivided into little sections. So we're going to start with section Lamed Aleph. Amar HaChaver, this is the Chacham, the Jewish sage. He says, "B'din ha'inyin ha'tvi'i nitchayev l'kichas ha'mazon v'agidu v'ho'olada v'kochasun v'chol t'na'ehim." When you're talking about the inyan ha'tvi'i, the natural element that's part of mankind, so we have different things they do, like taking in food, growth, reproduction, and all different kochos. And the ones who have this natural element to them is specifically the plants and the balei chayim, the animals, and obviously not inanimate objects like adama and avanim, things like that. This is the first two categories. We're all familiar with the famous hierarchy in creation. There is domain, that's the rocks that we're speaking about here. Someach, those plant life. Chai, which is the animal kingdom. And then Medaber, which are the humans. So he says that the Chai and the Someach are able to have this natural element that takes in food, that reproduces. Amar Kuzaris, the king says that. You're right, you need to go more into detail, but yes, you're correct. The animals and the plants grow. Then the Chaver says, "Ubeinyan nafshi," but when it comes to the soul, "Hityachtu balei chayim kulam." When soul here, I think, refers more to movement. The word nefesh is oftentimes identified with movement in medieval writing. So here he speaks about nefesh being much more of a life force of things. It's not only movement; it also reflects emotions and other things. That he says, and this is something that the balei chayim, animals, have a relationship to. The plants don't have a relationship to this element, but the animals do. Instincts. Amar Khuzari, gamze in derech l'tchosel. You're right, I can't argue with that either. Amar ha'chaver, u'bedin ha'inyin ha'sichli. But when it comes to, right, we already spoke about the basic element, the natural element. Then we spoke about the life force element that you find in animals. Oh, but when it comes to the inyan hasichli, the intellectual element, hityachid hamedaber mikol achayim. Here, who's the one who really excels in this area? The medaber, speaking being, meaning the humans. V'tchayvimu mimenu tikun amidos v'ham'on v'hamedinos v'ayu anhagos v'nimusim v'nhagim. And here we find that they have character traits, and they have etiquette, and they have cultural etiquette and cultural rules. Amar kuzari gam zemes. This is also true. V'izim adrega tachoshev l'mala mizos. And what mila do you think is greater than this, than the medaber, the human characteristics, the human elements? Amar kuzari, mila sachachamim hagedolim. Well, obviously, very, very smart people. That's even the next level. So says back the chaver, no, I don't mean just a more sophisticated version of humans. He says, the way we've been describing this discussion so far is that there were the plants, and the plants were a unique category from the rocks. And we spoke about the animals, they're a unique category from the plants. And then we spoke about humans, and they're a unique category from the animals. So now I'm asking you, is there a unique category above humans? I don't mean chachamim, who are just more sophisticated humans. Just like within animals, you have dolphins and African gray parrots, which are much more sophisticated than worms. I don't mean more sophistication within the group. I mean a whole new group. Is there a whole other category? So the chaver says that. So the kuzari says, Imkein ein ma'ilam u'mugoshim yiseiru al ma'ilas b'nei adam. He says in paragraph mem. No, there's nothing greater in creation than humans. If you mean like down here people, obviously there might be angels, but down here there's nobody greater. So the chaver says, really, if I was able to describe to you a man or men who are able to go into fire and not be hurt, they're able to stand on a mountain for 40 days and not eat or drink and not tire. If I could tell you about people who, when it was time for them to die, they just went up to the top of a mountain and climbed into a grave the same way that you and I climb into a bed, would you not think that there's something here that's a whole new category, another being? So the Kuzari says, yes, this is a angelic. Hamala hazot elokit melachutit imhi nimtzeit. This is a angelic, divine thing that you're describing, if such a thing exists. V'zemi din ha'inyan ha'eloki. And this is not the inyan ha'tfi'i, the natural element, nor the inyan ha'nafshi, the life force element that we spoke about, nor is this the inyan ha'sikhli, the intellectual element. This is a whole other element. This is the inyan ha'eloki, the godly element. Lo min ha'sikhli v'lo min ha'nafshi v'lo min ha'tfi'i. This is a whole other element. And then the chaver says, okay, I'm now going to be able to describe to you a people that have this Inyan Eloki. Then he goes on to start to talk about a little bit about Jewish history, which we'll get to in a second. This term, Inyan Eloki, repeats itself many, many times in the Sefer HaKuzari, and it represents some type of divine spark, some type of divine element that the Kuzari argues is found dafka within the Jewish people. And this is the basic message that the Chacham says, or the Chaver says to the Kuzari, that there are people who exist on a totally different level of creation. This perhaps could be understood, at least this way, perhaps that Yehuda Levi understood the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. Hu haya omer, Paragimel Mishnah Yodalet, Chaviv Adam Shnivra B'Tselem. How Chaviv is man, he's created in Tzelem Elokim. Chibi Yisera Nodas Lo, Shnevar B'Tzelem, Shnevar B'Tzelem Elokim, Alsas Adam. Man is great, all of man apparently, because he's created in the divine image. Chavivin Yisrael, Shenikru Banim, Lamakom. But the Jews have a special Chavivus, because they're called Banim Lamakom. Chiba Yisera Nodas Lohem, Shenikru Banim Lamakom, Shnevar Banim Atem Lashem Elokechem. Chavivin Yisrael Shnitalam Klichemda. The Jews are especially special. Because of why? They were given Hashem's Klichemda. And what's that? That's the Torah. Just like a child doesn't receive his special relationship with the father because of some mission that the child takes upon himself. But the child is just a child. You can have a person who's a tremendously special person, and then you can have a child who's a tremendous bum. But yet the child is still the tzaddik's child because we don't say, oh, you don't earn to be the tzaddik's child. By inherently, you just are the child of this tzaddik. So too, Klal Yisrael referred to as banim. And perhaps banim reflects some type of inherent characteristic. Perhaps we would find a hint to this in Havdalah as well. We say in Havdalah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Mavdil Ben Kodesh L'chol, Ben Or L'choshech, Ben Yisrael L'amin. So again, one has to ask, what does that mean, Yisrael L'amin? Does that mean that the Jews are just more sophisticated Amim? Are they like the Amim but just have a special mission? Well, the difference between Or and Choshech is clearly a fundamental difference between Or and Choshech. The difference between Kodesh and Chol, so perhaps so too, when we're comparing Klal Yisrael and saying Ben Yisrael La'amim, and comparing that to Ben Kodesh L'Chol, Ben Or L'Choshech, it also represents some type of inherent difference. Where did all this come from? So the Kuzari continues in the next paragraph here, and tells us this is something, this is a pedigree. This is something that was passed on in the genes of Klal Yisrael.
Lo ha'yachal ha'inyin ha'lokhi kim b'yachidim b'nei Adam asher achar Adam harishon. He Adam Rishon built it tonight. Obviously, Adam Rishon was a perfect creation. Obviously, not completely perfect because he sinned, but he had within him this divine element, Inyan Eloki. The Adam holded banim rabim. Lohem em royalios b'makom Adam el hevel. And out of all of his children, the special gene, the special pedigree, the Inyan Eloki, was only passed on to one of his children. That was Hevel. Ki hu ayadom elo ukasher hargu kayin achim nekinaso.
He claims the reason Cain killed Hevel was because he identified that Hevel had this special gene that he didn't have.
Then it went to Shais, who was similar to Adam. Uskulas Shais Enosh, and the pride of Shais was Enosh. And it passed on one to the other. And we continue in the paragraph, four or five lines down towards the end. This Inyan Eloki clung to the Avos, well, from father to son. Avram skulas Aver, the Tamido Avram, from his grandfather Aver. He says that it passed over Terach. It was a recessive. What do we call that? It was latent. It was sitting inside him, but it was never mitgaleh in Terach. But it was passed on. What was that? It was passed on from Eber to Terach, and then from Terach to Avram. It never was Mitzgalen Terach, but it was Mitzgalen Avram. And that's why Avram is called the Ivri, to make the reference back to his grandfather, Eber. The Eber Yiskula Shem, the Shem Yiskula Noach, and he shows how it goes, and it continues on, and you see, it went then to Moshe and to Aaron, and then eventually at Matan Torah, everybody accepted the Torah, and that was Zeha Yitchilas. That's the first time that the Inyan Eloki was chal on the entire nation, and now it became a national trait, the Inyan Eloki, and it was passed on within the Jewish bloodline.
And he goes on to explain how this is a racial pedigree. It's something that passes on from father to son, and it's something that's within the Jewish nation. This is what the Kuzari describes. Now, obviously, according to the Kuzari, if this is an inherent quality, the question is possible to lose this quality if it's something that you're born with, if it's something that you're inherent with. And the truth is, we're told, anyone here who might be doing Nachyomi, so we just read a day or two ago, or if you're behind a day or two, so you're reading today or tomorrow, so when Ochan sinned with taking the Biza from which city? Yericho? Okay, I think it was Ai, no? No, from Yericho, he was punished in Ai, yeah, thank you. So when he took from Yericho, and he was punished, when the Klal Yisrael was punished with the defeat at Ai, so the Pasuk there says, Chata Yisrael. And the Gemara in Sanhedrin picks up on this, that the reference is Chata Yisrael. And it says, Afapi Shechata Yisrael. Even though he was Chote, he's still called Yisrael. The Pasuk still refers to him as Yisrael. And you see that a Jew, this is what Rabbi Abba Bar Zavta says, that Afapi Shechata Yisrael Hu, that even if a person sins, he's still a Jew. This is the reason why a Jew who tries to convert to Christianity, it doesn't work. It's a whole discussion. Does he need to, when he converts back, does he have to go to mikvah? It's a whole big discussion. But Afapi Shechata Yisrael Hu, he still has the status of a Jew. And this seems to be a machlokas in Kiddushin. What was that? That's the Gemara in Sanhedrin says. This is the, if you just flip to the next page for a second, the Gemara in Kiddushin on Daf Lamed Vav Amud Aleph says, Banim Atem LaShem Elokeichem, the pasuk from Devarim that we quoted, Bisman sh'atem noagim minhag banim, when you act like a ben, atem kruyim banim. Ein atem noagim minhag banim, ein atem kruyim banim. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says this is not a racial pedigree, genetic issue. If you're acting like banim, so then you have the status of banim. If you're not acting like banim, you lose the status. This is not something that you're born with. This is a responsibility and a zchus that you accept upon yourself. Therefore, you can lose it. Rabbi Meir Omer, bein kach ubein kach atem kriyim banim. No. Whether you're acting properly, whether you're not acting properly, banim is banim. You're in. Shenemar, and he quotes a bunch of psukim. It says in Yirmiyah, banim schalim hema. Schalim hema. That they're, it's not a nice term. That they're foolish children. And yet it still refers to them as banim. Banim lo uman bam. Zera mireim, banim mashchisim. You're a horrible, disgusting, but you're still banim. You see in the psukim that they're still being referred to as banim. And amazingly, there's a Shud HaRashba in Chelek Aleph, from the Kuf Tzad Yudal, the next source on the sheet, where he's discussing, are you allowed, there's an isser to give a halva with ribbis to a Jew. So what about a Jew who's a mishumur, he's a mumar, he rejects, he becomes a Christian, are you allowed to lend to him with ribbis? And what about being machzir lo aveidoso? So the Rashba paskins you can. Because the isser is not totally on being Jewish. The isser is totally, it says achecha, it's totally on a person who's noheg minyan achim, someone who's being noheg like a Jew. That's what the Gemara darshans. Someone who's acting like a Jew is where the isser of ribbis is. Hold on 1 second. Aval, in the second line, negabe tuma. What about tuma? It's a machlokas about whether goyim or matame. Jews are definitely matame. Let's say this guy who's converted to Christianity, quote unquote, he's not acting like a Jew. So, is he tame? Is he matame? Or maybe he's like a non-Jew, he's not matame. V'od. What about if he does kiddushin? Is kiddushin kiddushin? Let's say he does a get. If he gets married to a woman, is she now usher to the rest of Klal Yisrael? Like the same way in Ashes Ishes? So he says, pashat, 100%. Why? Because we paskin like Rabbi Meir, who says, u'bichlal banim hu, kedivrei Rabbi Meir. V'af agav, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, alach Rabbi Yehuda. Even though we have Klal Yapsak, that when there's a machlokas Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir, the halach is like Rabbi Yehuda. Here, since Rabbi Meir was kroa kadayik, since he brought proofs from psukim, the halach is like Rabbi Meir. And that means that the Rashba paskins, that this machlokas, whether you only have the status of banim when you're noheg minhag banim, or if you have the status of banim even without being noheg minhag banim, the Rashba says we paskin like Rabbi Meir. And it has halacha nafkamina for kiddushin, for gerushin. So, this would all be suggesting that it's inherent, like the Kuzari suggests. I'm going to take all your questions in 1 second. I just want to point out, though, that there's a little bit of a problem with this, because there are certainly makoros that imply in Chazal that it's not inherent. It's not inherent at all. Besides Shitas Rabbi Yehuda, and it could just be a machlokas tanoim, if it's inherent or not. But we have, for instance, Shmos Rabbah tells us. This is Parsha Mem Zayin, next source on the sheet. Lakach nema kosev l'chosev devar ma'ela, ki al pia devar ma'ela, she'ula ilule torasi. If it wasn't for the Torah that I gave you, she'kibaltim, lo ha'isi makir etchem, lo ha'isi mabit bachem, mishar obde kochavim. Shem says, I wouldn't look at you, I wouldn't notice you, there'd be no difference between you and the Goyim if it wasn't for the fact that you accepted the Torah. Lefikach karati et chabris, v'yas Yisrael. It's not inherent. You, Hashem went around, he went to Paran, he went to Sayer, he went to all the different nations, he asked them if they wanted the Torah, they said no. He asked us if we wanted the Torah, we said yes, and now we became Hashem's special children, we became chosen. This is not a racial issue, this is not inherent. It's because you accepted upon yourself a tremendous mission. Some people like to say, Hashem didn't choose us, we chose Hashem. We're not chosen. We're chosen because we chose. That's what it sounds like from Shmos Rabbah. So what's the pshat? What's the element here? What's the yisod of Jewish chosenness? I'll even point out that in the psukim themselves, it sounds like it's not inherent. Take a look in Shmos Perek Yud Tes. Umosha Allah Elohim vayikrei lav Hashem in ahar loymor kotam alav nei Yaakov v'dakei lav nei b'nei Yisrael. Atem re'isem asher asisi le'mitzrayim v'aseh eschem al kanfei nesharim v'avo eschem elai. You saw everything I did in Mitzrayim, how I took you out. I'm going to bring you to me. V'yatam shamatishmu b'koli. If you listen to my words, ushmartem es brisi, and you keep my Torah, then v'yisim li segula. Then you will be a special treasure. Mikol ho'amim. Ki li kol ha'aretz. V'atem to you li mamlechas kohanim v'goy kadosh, and then you'll be for me mamlechas kohanim. You'll be a goy kadosh. Eila advar masher tidaber al b'nei Yisrael. So from the psukim it also sounds, if you listen to my Torah, so then you'll become special. Right, we have 8 minutes. I saw a bunch of questions, so let me hear the questions, and then I'll see. Maybe I'll answer them at the end. Let me hear the questions. Go ahead. Nice and loud. Nice and loud.
I'm assuming everyone would agree that a ger has this kedusha, no? So
yes.
Not
so we have to answer up what happens to a ger. Good. Next.
Child of a Jewish male, but not, you know, going on.
So what happens to the pedigree?
Also, Tol Papa talks about the fact that we're not doing what Hashem said, and still he protects us. We don't die out.
Good.
What about Karis?
What about Karis?
It says that the whole is of Karis is that it cuts you off.
Yeah.
So that means you cut off a nation. Does that mean that it actually takes you away from being Jewish?
So there are a lot of different shitas of what Karis is exactly, but okay, we'll have to see. Also, good point. Yeah.
That's what we'll say. Is it, we said before that it's possible it's recessive, like it skipped with Abraham's father, so then can that happen now also?
So the Kuzari says that once Klai Yisrael accepted the Torah, it then became completely national, a national gene, and it didn't, it, only when it was with the Yechidim it was passing over one to the other. Okay, there's your question. Okay. Alright, these are all excellent questions, and if we have 2 hours to discuss B'chiras Yisrael, so we can go into the whole sugya. Obviously, again, like I've said, I'm happy. These are all good questions. They all are addressed and need to be addressed. And I invite you to look at the Kuzari. Not that he addresses all the questions that were asked, but you know, this is again, this is to whet our palates for delving more into topics and personalities. So tonight we're learning more about the Kuzari and about the topic of Jewish chosenness. And these are all questions that need to be addressed. I want, with the last few minutes that we have, I want to share with you a Hesber of the Derech Hashem, based on something in the Derech Hashem, that I think can help bring together these two different elements, this inherent element and the element of what I keep referring to as mission-based, which is my own term, but this idea that we have a mission. Our chosenness is because of our mission that we are given. The Derech Hashem says explicitly, he says that it certainly is an inherent trait. He says, however, it started with Adam. And when it was given to Adam, it was supposed to be a special trait that all of creation had. There was no chilik between Jew and non-Jew. All of mankind was supposed to have this special inyan Eloki, and everyone was supposed to have this tremendous relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. However, during Dor HaFlaga, and during all of the sinning, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu realized that it was time to destroy the people, that they weren't acting properly. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu then said, I'm going to have to come up with a new plan. Instead of making the entire world elevated and all of them having the Inyan Eloki, I'm going to have to choose special ambassadors to be the ones to bring my message to the world. And he chose Avram, and Avram chose Hashem. And because of Avram's realization of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so therefore Avram accepted upon himself the mantle of being the one who would spread the Inyan Eloki to the world. And it was passed on from generation to generation. Avram was Korei B'Shem Hashem, and he spread Hashem's message to the world. When it was time for Sinai, and Klal Yisrael as a group, finally as an entire nation, accepted upon themselves the mission of Avram Avinu, to be the ambassadors of Torah, to be the ones who would spread Torah to the world, so the Inyan Eloki was now part of the entire nation. This is the idea of Paskazu Hamasam. It says that they lost their Zuhama, that which reflects the loss of the Inyan Eloki. And because Klal Yisrael accepted Torah, because they accepted upon themselves the mission, so they were then Zocha, right? Someone asked about a Ger. There's some type of reality that if a person accepts upon himself the mission, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu imbues him with the Inyan Eloki. Again, whatever that means. If it means in some places in Kuzari speaks about it as it means you're some type of sensitivity to Nevuah. It's some type of element or quality that makes you able to connect to Nevuah. You take a look at the Sefer Kuzari to understand all the different ways that he explains the manifestations of the Inyan Eloki. But what comes out according to the Derech Hashem, and it could be Pshat in the Kuzari as well, is that the Inyan Eloki is both inherent, and it's also mission-based. It's an inherent quality that was started with all of creation, was passed on to Avram, and is able to spread to other people through acceptance upon themselves of Torah. And at that point it becomes inherent and part of a person. And perhaps can't even be lost at that point, when a person accepts upon themselves the yoke of Torah and the yoke of Yahadus. Now, this very interesting suggestion that's based on the Derech Hashem, the Rav also described a certain also this duality, that Jews have an inherent quality to them and also a mission-based quality. The Malbim says it explicitly in the Pesukim. The Pasuk says that we're going to be an Am Segula and a Goy Kadosh. And the Malbim says that the difference between Segula and Kadosh is that Segula is something that's inherent, some inherent quality, and Goy Kadosh is something that's Lefi our Maisim. That quality of being a Goy Kadosh is based on the actions that we do. And that in reality, all of us have two different elements to us. There's an element that's inherent, and there's an element that is part of our dedication to Torah. The Rav discusses this in a famous piece in Kol Dodi Dofek, where he speaks about the covenant of fate and the covenant of destiny. That there are people who are people of fate. When it comes to fate, and he says there was no greater reflection of this and manifestation of this than the Holocaust, all Jews share the same fate. Whether you're religious, whether you're not religious, whether you're dedicated to the great goals and ideals of man of Torah, whether you're not, Jews all share the same fate. But destiny, which is, again, fate is when you stand back and you allow history to attack you and have its effect on you. Destiny are those who stand up and carve their own future. He says that the destiny of Klal Yisrael is always connected with Torah. Those who take upon themselves the yoke of Torah. There are times when a person's a Jew just because of the fact that he's a Jew. He's just born a Jew and that's who he is, and he's chosen just because of that. But there's a whole nother level of being a Jew which comes only through the Kedusha of Mitzvos, Kadoshenu Mitzvosecha, Goy Kadosh. This only comes through dedication. So, the way that Rav Kook writes it in a letter, because Rav Kook received an angry letter from Europe, from one of the Gedolim in Europe who was very upset that Rav Kook had so much to do with the Chilonim. I believe the letter is Tuf Kuf Nun Hei, Takana. In that letter, in the letters of Rav Kook, so he says, I'll tell you why I spend time with the Chilonim and I speak to them. He says, because even though our Iker Kedusha and our Iker chosenness comes from our dedication to Torah and Mitzvos, and a Jew who sits back and isn't dedicated to Torah and Mitzvos, so he's really not so chosen, a Jew can never lose that small, tiny little spark of Inyan Eloki that's just inherently part of a Jew. For Rav Kook, the inherent level is there. Yes, there's a pedigree. Jews are inherently different, but it's very, 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 very slight. Very, very slight. It's only really brought out when a Jew is dedicated to Torah. And then when he does that, he's able to truly, truly connect to the divine element, the Inyan Eloki, that makes a Jew chosen. So, again, all of this is not in the Kuzari, and we didn't get to read one last little passage here in the Kuzari, but this entire discussion of Jewish chosenness, which is a very hot and controversial topic, is it inherent, is it biological, is it mission-based? So, for the Rav, for Rav Kook, for the Malbim's understanding of the Psukim, it's both. But from a straight reading of the Kuzari, so the Kuzari is the voice that's going to speak loudest about this inherent quality that a Jew has that makes him unique and perhaps prepares him for his elevated mission in the world to be ambassadors for HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to bring the message of Torah to the world.